Today on Vox Talks Economics, the case for a positive euro area inflation target. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips, and every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Inflation affects, among other things, the distribution of relative prices in the economy, and as a result, it reduces economic welfare by distorting demand. But what would be the inflation rate that minimized these distortions? Maybe it's not what our models assume it is. According to new research in the euro area, Klaus Adam of the University of Mannheim is one of the authors, and he joins me now. Klaus, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Pleasure to be here.
The core idea here, if I get it right, is that inflation creates misalignments in relative prices. But why is that the case, and why do we care about that?
Yeah, so when the relative price, that is the ratio between the price of one good and the price of another good, does not reflect the relative social cost of producing these goods, we get distortions in demand of these goods. So to make a particularly stark example, consider, say, former communist economies in Eastern Europe who all heavily subsidized the price of bread. And as a result of these subsidies, hog farms started feeding their piglets with bread because it was cheaper than feeding them with grain. And this just highlights how wrong relative prices create inefficient demand distortions. The cheap price of bread signals to these farmers that it's socially cheaper to feed bread than grain, but obviously, socially, it is not the case because we could conserve a lot of energy and work by feeding the grain instead of the bread.
And central bank models, as you point out, have an optimal reference inflation rate of around zero. That's to avoid these demand distortions?
Yeah, exactly. So the optimal inflation rate in these models is zero because they make some specific assumptions, these central bank models. They look at a situation in which prices can adjust only infrequently, which the data suggests to be the case. And then they assume that it is inefficient that the relative price of goods moves over time. And to get from this setting to zero inflation is actually quite simple. In periods in which prices do not get adjusted, inflation will erode the relative price of goods because it causes these prices to become cheaper in relative terms relative to some other consumption basket. But that's not efficient because we have just assumed that these relative prices should move. So let's not have any inflation. And then likewise, let's also not have deflation either because deflation would induce a trend in relative prices in the opposite direction, which again is inefficient. So the solution is to have zero inflation. But really, this is all due to the assumption that these models make that relative prices should remain constant over time.
At the moment, a lot of people are thinking, hang on, the ECB, for example, that targets 2% inflation, as does the Bank of England over here. Is that for other reasons?
Right, that is for other reasons. So the ECB, for instance, makes explicit reference to the zero inflation number in its new monetary policy strategy statement, but then lists three reasons for why it would like to have a positive inflation buffer. So the first reason is the so-called lower bound constraint on nominal interest rates. That is the fact that nominal interest rates cannot go significantly into negative territory. And this constraint might create some deflationary pressures for the economy because the central bank cannot ease policy as much as it would like to. And then to stay away from this potential deflation, it can be optimal to have a positive buffer. So that would be one reason. And then the second reason is that sometimes it's optimal for real wages to fall to facilitate macroeconomic adjustment. But at the same time, it's often very difficult to cut the nominal wage of workers. So by having a little bit of inflation that erodes the real wage, we can get macroeconomic adjustment without having to resort to nominal wage cuts. And then they list that there's a concern that true inflation may be mismeasured, in fact, overmeasured, because statistical agencies only imperfectly account for quality progress in goods. And quality progress causes goods and services to become more expensive, which the statistical agencies record as inflation, but it's not because it reflects at least partly increased quality. Thus, to get the true measure of inflation to zero, inflation as measured by the statistical agency has to be slightly positive.
I see. Now, having explained all of that. Your argument is that the reference point of zero, the point we've been talking about, is misguided if we want to minimize the relative price distortions. Now, we'll get to why that is in a minute. But first of all, to test this, you're going to need a lot of micro data on individual prices. Where do you get this data?
Yeah, so the data I get through statistical agencies that make it available to us through the national central banks that were involved in these research studies. And the difficult thing was to disprove that the assumption of zero trend in relative price is a reasonable assumption. Mm. We need to have the data to disprove that. And we got this microprice data, which is actually the microprice data underlying the construction of the CPIs, of the consumer price indices, right, in these countries. And we have around 80 million individual price quotes over a time span of around 10 years, so around 8 million quotes per year. These are very large data sets.
Mm, and these countries in your paper are France, Germany, Italy. Why these three? Why not the whole euro area?
Well, you know, working with several micro data sets at the same time can be really tedious, especially if you want to do the work carefully. That is, you know, say, check for outliers and the idiosyncrasies that are present in these data sets. Make sure that you have the same methodology and can apply it actually to the data that is available. So looking really at all euro area countries was not an option. We initially focused on the biggest four, the so-called EMU4, which comprised France, Germany, Italy, and Spain. But then we lost Spain on the way because the data there was selected in a way that product turnover wasn't representative. Yeah. And that was important for our purposes. So we ended up with the three biggest euro area countries. And these make up around 2/3 of euro area GDP.
So the big question here, what does this data tell us, is the distortion minimizing inflation rate?
We estimate that for all three economies together, and it's around 1.4%. That is, on average, goods and services should become cheaper at the rate of 1.4% per year over the product or service lifetime. So there's some uncertainty around these estimates. It's around 0.3 percentage points. So somewhere between 1.1 and 1.7% is the optimal number. This might not sound much, but if you're a monetary economist or a central banker, it lies quite a lot above the zero reference rate.
Absolutely. And what is driving this difference from the zero rate?
It's mainly efficient relative price trends in the goods sector. In services and also in some of the subcategories of the goods sector, like food or so, we don't see any significant trends in relative prices. But for the physical goods that are not energy goods, so-called non-energy industrial goods, the rates of relative price decline are strong. In France and Germany, there's a rate of decline of around 5% per year, and in Italy, about half that rate. As a result, the optimal inflation target is slightly below 2% in France and Germany, but slightly below 1% in Italy.
As you point out there, Italy's kind of different to the other two, isn't it? What is making Italy different?
Yeah, that's really the million-dollar question, but also incredibly hard to answer using our data, which is only about prices. We only see the prices. We have no information on the producers of these goods and services, and so can't say really a lot. One thing we can say is that inflation rates across a fine set of goods and service categories correlate between Italy and Germany in the same way as they correlate between France and Germany. And that means the differences in the relative price trends must come from how goods prices over the lifetime behave. It's not because of differences in inflation, and that's sometimes called same good price inflation. So in France and Germany, these same good prices fall faster or increase less strongly than in Italy over the lifetime. And this could have to do with learning by doing effects, which cause more productivity progress in France and Germany over the lifetime of goods and makes them cheaper faster. But this is, of course, a little speculative. We have no direct evidence on that, but that is something that would be consistent. Finding out what is ultimately behind this would be quite interesting and also challenging. In particular, it would be very challenging to get the data that would allow us to get a better picture of this. I have some ongoing work using Danish data, which is extremely good, but of course that won't tell us about what's going on in Italy.
This whole exercise to me seems extremely challenging. And another aspect of this rather heroic piece of number crunching that you're doing here is you've looked at welfare costs as well. So in the euro area, how big do you estimate that the welfare costs are of suboptimal inflation targeting that we're having at the moment?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So the cost of suboptimal inflation can become quite large. I mean, if just for the sake of the argument, we assume that the ECB would target an inflation rate of zero, as in fact suggested by their standard models, then welfare costs due to relative price dispersions can easily reach 4% of consumption in present value terms. If we assume permanent inflation rates at the sort of currently higher level, say 4% per year, then costs shoot up to around 11% of consumption in present value terms. So 11% of an annual consumption level. That is quite a bit, I'd say, yeah.
Yes, it is. So does your research suggest that ECB policy is in error at the moment? What does it suggest that wise inflation targeting policy would be for the euro area at this time?
Well, I think drawing direct implications for ECB policy is difficult just using our paper. As we said before, a number of other considerations would have to be added beyond the concern for relative price distortion. So things like, you know, keeping the euro area together, lower bound constraint on nominal interest rates, potential downward rigidity of wages, we mentioned, cash credit distortions, cash demand distortions, things like that. So this is something that's really on our plate going forward to integrate the present setup with distortions with these other arguments. And we can say already that because most of these other considerations create additional upward forces to inflation, the optimal inflation rate is potentially going to be higher than what we estimate. Mm-hmm. And in some sense, our estimates provide a floor for what the ECB should target. And given that the ECB targets 2%, which is a number slightly higher than what we find optimal, so they look good on this account. If it's the right amount of higher, I can tell you once we have done the work to integrate this economy. Consideration. So maybe we'll be back once we have the new result.
I'm going to get you back and I'm going to ask you that question again. I couldn't tempt you this time, but I had to ask. So Klaus, it's a very interesting piece of work and I look forward to what you do next. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us over. Thank you.
The paper is called The Case for a Positive Euro Area Inflation Target, Evidence from France, Germany and Italy's discussion paper 16828 at CEPR. And the authors are Klaus Adam, Ivan Gautier, Sergio Santoro and Henning Weber. This has been Box Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. If you want to know what you will be reading in journals 18 months from now, then listen to Vox Talks Economics Today. And when you subscribe, there's almost 200 episodes now. So whatever type of economics you prefer, well, we've got a Vox Talk for you.